public, but
that's right.
Let's move on.
Edward, let's move on to our next guests. I think we have Scott Frisch and Sean Kelly on the phone with us.
Yes, you do. Hello.
Very good. Good morning, gentlemen. We're talking to, as I said, Scott Frisch and Sean Kelly, who are associate. Well, Sean's an associate professor of political science, and Scott
actually just promoted.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to update your bio. Okay, they're both professors of political science at Cal State University, Channel Islands in Ventura County. And the most important question before we get to the substance is, what is the mascot of Cal State Channel Islands?
The dolphin.
Okay, good. Okay, so kind of like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. That was the mascot of the Dolphins as well.
Another trivia question. Is Tim Hurt the greatest columnist of Ventura Stars ever produced?
He's a great guy, I'll tell you that much. He's a wonderful columnist, does some great pieces, talk to him occasionally.
I'll answer that too. Yes, he's wonderful. Okay, let's get down to substance, which has to do with Cheese on the Moon. You two have written a book coming out very soon, and the theme is how pork is good for democracy, and it's entitled Cheese Factories on the Moon. Okay, guys, you're on the spot. Why is pork good for democracy? And don't everyone answer at once.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where we're pointing at each other. But there are a lot of reasons why pork is good for democracy. It starts out with our United States Constitution, which gives the power of the purse to Congress and not the president and not unelected people who work in the executive branch who may or may not have citizens' best interests in mind. We spend literally 200 pages making the case that there are throughout our country's history, many examples of pork that has been used to build coalitions that has been useful and good for citizens and yeah, read the book. There's so many reasons why. Sean, do you want to fill in?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, in giving the power of the purse to the Congress, what the founders were looking to do was put that power as closely to the people as they could, and. You know, Madison said, in effect, in I think it's Federalist Paper 58, he said, you know, this really will give the people a way to have Congress address issues that are important to them.
So give us some examples of where pork has come in handy in promoting a popular cause, such as, say, civil rights or the space program.
One of the best examples, probably because it's one that we're all familiar with, it's, you know, right out of the news today, is the Predator drone. The Predator drone project, the idea for it, was one that the Pentagon really wasn't all that hot about when Congressman Jerry Lewis found out that, you know, it was possible to have unmanned vehicles, and so he approached the Pentagon, and they didn't want to have anything to do with it because, well, I mean, you're not putting a pilot in there, and that's what they're all about. And so he earmarked some money into the so-called black budget to begin developing this technology, and now some years down the road here, it's become a weapon in Afghanistan and so I think that's a high profile example of Congress saying, you may not want to do this, but we think you should do this, and it turns out to be something quite consequential.
Mm-hmm. Now, we just mourned the passing of Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, who might have been the most effective pork accumulating mm-hmm. senator in modern times. What are some of the examples of some of the, quote, pork that he brought to West Virginia? Isn't there a Coast Guard facility in West Virginia?
Yeah, there is a Coast Guard facility, and you often people use that as an example of, oh, my goodness, look at how wasteful pork is. There's not even an ocean in West Virginia. Well, if you look at it, it was a computer center for the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. And you can put a computer center in India, you can put a computer center in California, you can put one in West Virginia. And West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the country. And I would make the case that the people of West Virginia could use all the help they can get in terms of economic development, support, and government employees. And a Coast Guard facility in West Virginia may sound silly, and to people who want to ridicule earmarks and pork, well, that's a great case study. Well, look at Byrd did. He brought the Coast Guard to West Virginia. But if you look at it and you dig deeper, well, middle-class jobs, government stable jobs that aren't going anywhere in a Coast Guard computing facility, maybe that makes sense to locate it anywhere in the world, put it in West Virginia.
So how does Senator Byrd do that? How is he so effective, and are the rest of them who criticize pork just jealous?
How did he do it? Well, some of it comes with seniority, some of it comes with power, and that's certainly something that you have to look at in terms of pork, that the longer you're there and the key committees you serve on, you probably have a better opportunity to do that kind of thing. But we've seen in recent years, really since 2007, much more of a democratization in terms of pork. After the Democrats took control this last time, there's been an effort to try and open up the process, make it more visible to the public. And so there's been a lot of changes since then. And I think in many ways they've improved the process a lot.
And I would just add to that that I was surprised that your first question wasn't about the title, Cheese Factories on the Moon.
Because it's so absurd. There's no way there's a cheese factory on the moon, right?
well, you know, Phil Graham said, the former senator from Texas who could really turn a phrase, he said, in effect, that if Congress were to vote on whether or not to put a cheese factory on the moon, he would vote against it. But if they decided that that was going to be national policy, he would do everything that he could to make sure that the milk came from Texas cows. The Celestial Distribution Center would be in Dallas, Texas, or College Station, or somewhere else in Texas. And, you know, that's really the job of a representative, first of all, to set the national priority. But then once the priority is set, to try to do the best job that he or she can do to make sure that the citizens of his or her state are going to be served. And that's what we look for from our representatives, at least most of us. And so going back to Robert Byrd, that's what Byrd did. Byrd served the people of West Virginia by getting them that Coast Guard Computing Center. And, you know, I would say any representative who doesn't look to gain advantage for his or her constituents really isn't doing their job very well.
Go ahead, Edward.
Can I ask a question?
Okay, Dick Kastner at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Chime in, please.
I guess my question is, they may be doing their job in the minds of their constituents, but at the expense of the rest of us. That occurred to me when I was driving down the Bud Schuster Memorial Highway in rural Pennsylvania, and it was six lanes wide, and there were me and maybe 10 other cars I could see at any given time, but it was totally out of proportion to any national need. I know I paid more than my share for it.
What state was that in?
That was in rural Pennsylvania. Bud Schuster, former head of the House Transportation Committee.
Right, and they don't have CEQA in Pennsylvania, so they can build freeways that wide.
I wonder if the Amish have something for their...
That could be. Okay, professors,
yep.
Chime in on that.
There
Bud Schuster Memorial Highway.
There certainly are examples of projects that are ill-conceived and end up through earmarks. But I guess the question is, if the Bud Schuster Highway didn't exist, who would decide how to spend our highway money? And a lot of it is doled out formulas and then ultimately made decisions made in terms of state, in terms of highways. And some of that's based on data, and some of that's based on all sorts of other political consequences. Sure, there's going to be some examples of problems in any type of funding arrangement, but the question ultimately becomes, who's going to make those decisions? Is a member of Congress who, most of them are very responsive to their citizens, want to stand up and say, look, I brought you this wasteful highway? No, they really don't. Most of the highways we look that are funded, look at what's going on around the country in terms of the earmarks, are things that were really heavily wanted. Now, you do have the Bud Schuster highways that are out there that people point to again and again and again as these examples, but they're really, we're looking at anecdotes of one case out of thousands to prove a point, and that's really not the way we want to go about it in terms of doing research.
Okay,
yeah,
fair enough. So let me chime in here. If you compare the American system of governance with a parliament such as England or Israel or South Africa, do they have as much pork as we do, or are they, because they don't have districts the way we do, they don't have to deliver?
In one regard, it's hard to say because those systems are different. We can't speak to that issue exactly. But that's another part of this, which is that earmarks really reflect how different the United States is in a lot of ways. First of all, that the founders in the Constitution gave the power of the purse to the Congress. This is the strongest legislature in the world, most independent legislature in the world, and it was done that way for a reason. And so part of the difference there reflects that, and that, frankly, our elected representatives are much closer to the people than to the party. And in parliamentary systems, you can have this, strong party discipline and make these bureaucratic decisions and make them stick. But it's one of the unique features, here in the United States, of the way that representation gets done.
And ultimately, what we're talking about here is one third of our budget is discretionary at the United States level. So take that one third and then take 1%. Definitely what we're talking about in terms of earmarks. So 1% of the one-third of the budget that is controllable by Congress. We're really not talking about a huge amount of money in terms of the overall situation, a nearly $4 trillion budget when we're spending maybe $10, $11 billion on earmarks. It's blown way out of proportion in terms of the size, the scope of the problem. It's really, in our view, in many ways a red herring. Look over here. Look at all these earmarks. Look at the waste. When the waste in government, and there is a lot of it, exists in other programs elsewhere as well.
Okay, Edward, chime in.
Sean.
And I have an idea for pork that I want to ask these guys about after you're done.
Well, in 2008, it seemed like Obama was taken to task for using the idiom lipstick on a pig. And we have a lot of Jewish listeners on our show, and just wanted to, for the more orthodox ones, what do you have to say for your non-kosher title?
I had not thought about that, being Jewish myself. I've never even thought to it.
just a little joke from the goy here on the show. Brendan, I know you have a more substantive question.
Probably not. And I can't wait to pick up the book. But whenever there's an article about pork, there's always a reference to some museum, just some of the inane museums, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why does that need federal money? The Motorcycle Riders Museum in Texas. But how much those museums end up helping the economy of those congressional districts? So what
is, and not only that, most museum money goes out in grants. And in our book, we make the case that there's a $600,000 grant for the Grateful Dead Archive at Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz, which was done by the bureaucracy, not an earmark. A $90,000 earmark for the Cowgirl Museum, which people went ballistic about. Now think about it. Which $1,000 for the Grateful Dead, or $90,000 for a museum which really celebrates the history of women in America and the American West? I mean, those are the kinds of questions we ask in the book, and I think people will see pork in a different light if they pick up the book and read it.
So shouldn't the Grateful Dead Museum, shouldn't that be a traveling museum to be in the spirit of the dead?
That's right. With people following it around.
They get pulled over every 5 minutes.
Cherry Garcia and tie-dye t-shirt.
Yeah,
making.
I think UC Santa Cruz is sold out. Anyway, yeah, I have a lot of ideas for museums, but let me ask you a more substantive question. This will take a while to ask my question as usual. One of my pet peeves, here in the San Fernando Valley, we have three adjacent congressional districts: Adam Schiff, Howard Berman, Brad Sherman. All of them are on the Foreign Affairs Committee. L.A. County is represented very well on Foreign Affairs and House Judiciary Committees. I think only one of them, only one member from L.A. County is on the Appropriations Committee. So L.A. County is really the eighth largest state in the country. We are the economic engine. And Port Hueneme and Ventura County should be part of that equation as well. But we're more interested in what's going on overseas and on the Judiciary Committee than we are with appropriations. What are we missing out? How does Jerry Lewis's district make out more than L.A. County? By virtue of being on the right committee.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. We talked to Henry Wein writing the book, and he doesn't even ask for earmarks anymore. He's decided that the political cost is worse than the benefit that you get from them. And you're right, a lot of the LA delegation has focused in and elsewhere, and it, ultimately that does have an impact. One of the things that Waxman did tell us, though, is that Jerry Lewis has looked out on several occasions for UCLA and done things outside of his district for Southern California that benefit LA. So I think you're right that it probably would be wise for more representation to be there, and that would help. But ultimately, there is a lot of interest in foreign affairs, you're right.
Yeah, I'm raising my kids to run for Congress at 26 and get on the Appropriations Committee. So by the time they're 40, they'll be senior members, and by the time they're 80, they will have delivered billions of dollars to my neighborhood. Just my neighborhood.
I wait right. After you.
And hopefully we can move that Grateful Dead Museum down to Southern California. I didn't even know about it. I'm glad you guys brought that up. That's
keep on trucking.
On my list. All right, guys, we have a couple more minutes, so please remind us where we can buy this book and when it comes out. We're talking about Cheese Factories on the Moon with Professor Scott Frisch and Sean Kelly of Cal State Channel Islands. Where can one buy the book?
Right now, it'll be coming out in September. Right now, you could go to any Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, or our publisher, Paradigm Publishers, and do a paperback version coming out, and which will be more affordable than the hardback version. A couple of other places to go for right now in order to take care of your hunger for cheese would be one place is cheesefactoriesonthemoon.blogspot.com, where we're doing commentaries every couple of weeks on new stories, earmarks, things like that from the perspective of the book. And very, very shortly, we will have a website coming online at www.cheesefactoriesonthemoon.com. Which should be a fun site to go to, and we'll have some stuff on there for that teachers could use, or if people want to use this for a reading group or something like that, some questions and things like that.
Scott Frisch, I also want to point out that this is not your first book. You wrote a book that just caught my eye, Jimmy Carter and the Water Wars, Presidential Influence and the Politics of Pork, published in 2008 by Cambria Press. As somebody who really tracks water policy in California, this is something I can't believe I overlooked. So I assume we can purchase this book through Cambria Press as well.
Sure.
Yeah, Cambria or Amazon, any of the usual.
Very good. Well, Professors Frisch and Kelly of Kelsey Channel Islands, I'd like to thank you for calling in today and telling us about Cheese Factories on the Moon. Can't wait to pick it up. Can't wait to call Senator Graham and ask what he thinks about you guys plagiarizing his term.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Edward.